the Liberal Party has changed, largely due to the actions of the reactionary and regressive right wing who talk about and talk to themselves rather than listening to the people.
Whichever way you cut it, the Liberal Party is in serious trouble. That was Julia Banks, once a Liberal Party star, resigning her position to join the crossbench on Tuesday. The shock move has pushed Prime Minister Scott Morrison's government even further into minority. And that is just the start of it.
Nepean, a huge swing in Nepean. All these seats around here.
Now it's official, Labor wins this election. There is no coming back here.
The people of Victoria have today overwhelmingly endorsed a positive and optimistic plan for our state.
A thumping election defeat in Victoria last weekend exposed the ongoing rift in the party. A paralysis of ideology and policy.
Tonight is clearly not our night.
We did a lot of things right, but obviously something's gone horribly wrong.
Nothing worked. The campaign didn't work, the policies didn't work, the administration, the organisation didn't work, leadership didn't work, we didn't have any cut through. Across the board, it didn't work.
If you don't get into the ring, you won't win the fight. And I don't think the Liberal Party were ever in the ring.
With the Victorian Liberals banished to the political wilderness for the next 4 years, is the Federal Liberal Party doomed to the same fate in the election next May? Is there a brand of conservatism that appeals to Victorians, inner metropolitan Sydney and Queensland all at the same time? Or is it already too late? From the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain, a weekly podcast where you and I get the full story on some of the most significant issues facing Australia and a look inside the newsrooms that bring them to you. I'm Jacqueline Mailey. Well, it's been a heck of a week for the Liberal Party, yet again. To give us some insight into what's happening on the inside, we have Federal Editor and Canberra Bureau Chief Bevan Shields and Associate Editor and Special Writer based in Melbourne, Tony Wright. Later, we'll also hear from former Liberal leader John Hewson. We want to know how he's viewing this crisis from afar. I just want to turn to Victoria. So the Liberal Party is obviously reeling from a thumping defeat in Victoria last weekend. Many people are saying it's because Liberal leader Matthew Guy ran a campaign on crime and punishment and on social issues, which really turned voters off. Bevan, is that a fair assessment, do you think?
That is a very fair assessment, but it misses a couple of key factors. One factor is Matthew Guy's opposition, who was the Premier, Daniel Andrews, ran a very, very effective campaign that focused on issues that really mattered to Victorians, infrastructure, health, education, social issues. So Daniel Andrews' success and the success of the Labor government here was actually a factor, and this was a really rare election in a way where people were actually voting for a government. They weren't voting to get rid of a government. So there was that factor, but then there was also the Canberra problem. And that was that the removal of Malcolm Turnbull went down like a lead balloon in Victoria. Victoria is a very progressive state, probably the most progressive state in the nation. Victoria might not have been in love with Malcolm Turnbull, but they didn't dislike him. And the transactional costs of that August leadership implosion and move to Scott Morrison really, really hurt them here. So much that some people on both sides, strategists on both sides, think that it could have represented perhaps 2% towards the 6% swing towards Labor. So Canberra was absolutely a factor, but just one factor.
It was a big factor, though.
Tony, I want to bring you in on that, and particularly the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, seems to have embraced social conservatism, or that's probably his political brand, as a sort of direction for this government. But, you know, the Victorian results seem to demonstrate that moderate voters don't seem that interested in that direction. Is that what voters were telling you on the ground?
Those I spoke to, anyway, were so over the shenanigans in Canberra that they wanted to punish the nearest standing Liberal, and that was, of course, Matthew Guy and his team. I'm not suggesting that this is going to play the same in New South Wales or Queensland or anywhere else, but in Victoria, the anti-coalition government in Canberra is very strong indeed. It didn't help, I don't think, that Scott Morrison came down here after the last attack in Bourke Street and went into Pellegrini's, a place that is much loved by many, many people in Melbourne, with reporters and cameras in tow to offer his condolences. Interestingly, Daniel Andrews went into Pellegrini's by himself with no journalists and shook a few hands, had a cup of coffee and quietly left. I think that says quite a bit about the way Victorians might react to the style of Scott Morrison.
So federal Liberals like Josh Frydenberg and Greg Hunt, who are insisting that it was only state factors or mostly state factors that were at play in the election, are being disingenuous, essentially, according to what voters were telling you.
They're talking nonsense.
Yeah.
Of course, after every state election which goes pear-shaped for a government in Canberra, members of that government will say, look, this was fought on state grounds and state issues and all the rest of it. Quite often that is the case. Voters are sophisticated enough to be able to tell the difference between a state government and a federal government. But this time it wasn't really about government so much. It was about the Liberal Party. Of course, Greg Hunt and the others who feel that they might be punished coming up next year are going to say, look, you know, state issues. Nonsense.
We'll leave it there for now with Bevan and Tony, and I'll pick up with you guys a bit later on. I want to hear how you think this will all play out heading towards the next election. For now, it's time to hear from this week's special guest.
John Hewson.
John Hewson is a former Australian politician who served as leader of the Liberal Party from 1990 to 1994. John, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Tell us, what exactly are we watching happen to the Liberal Party right now? What is it unfolding?
Well, you'd have to say it's basically self-destructing before your eyes. This has been happening for quite some time. I think the reality of their electoral standing has not been recognised. The brand is damaged. And yet, as they go from, say, Longwood by-election to Wentworth to Victorian state election, they don't learn anything. There are no lessons in any of that. This is special factors. Was the candidate in Longwood. Wentworth's atypical seat. Victoria's, state issues-dominated campaign. I mean, let's not face the reality that maybe the brand was damaged right through all three.
So there's a different excuse offered for every recent defeat. Just talking about the Victorian election in particular, were you watching it on Saturday night, and what was going through your mind when you were watching the count unfold?
Well, it was certainly a rout, it was clear that some of the commentators were having some difficulty explaining that. But, the circumstances that existed in Victoria, sure, there's an element of state based in there, but also the Liberal Party's strategy is not believable. I mean, they don't relate to the issues that matter to people. I would have thought objectively going into the state election, Andrew's not such a great premier. I mean, he wasted $1 billion as a start-up by paying off a road that he didn't want to build, and he ends up having to build roads and this sort of thing. He hadn't done any of the level crossings he'd promised and so on. He'd been total captive of the union movement. There's a lot of reasons you could argue that this guy should have a hard run, and yet he didn't. He managed to pitch his message and his aura in a way that allowed him to say that we are the most progressive state in the country. We've won this on progressive issues, which wasn't largely true either. I mean, I think people just figured he was a better bet to stay in the job and finish what he started rather than risk going to an alternative that didn't really seem to have an integrated policy response on just about anything.
Mm.
They're running on law and order, and a lot of that was based on exaggeration and fear, which people just see right through these days.
John Howard, your former political rival and colleague, was on the ABC this week and explained away the Victorian election result by saying that Victoria is always, has always been a progressive electorate and called it the Massachusetts of Australia. What do you make of that analysis?
I didn't hear him say that when Kennett was Premier. And Victoria's, what, about a third of the country? I think there are lessons in there that should be adhered to. And it's just another excuse. It's a manufactured excuse for what happened. Okay, it's a Massachusetts of Australia. Well, I don't think so. I think that there are broad-based messages in there which should cause the party to step back and think about where they sit. I mean, they got rid of Wentworth, a traditional, iconic Liberal seat, and they've been saying, oh, well, it's an atypical seat. It doesn't represent Australia. You know, it's a special case. She only won by 1,800 votes. Don't count the swing she achieved to get there, in total nearly 20%, in a safe Liberal seat. I mean, these are big swings and there are a lot of lessons, and they got that messaging wrong. They ran a very bad campaign. I think I'd be looking for explanations in the reality of what happened, not in some way of just fobbing it off so we can move on to another day.
I want to move now to Julia Banks and her resignation, which took everyone by surprise this week.
To continue to put the people before the party and act in the nation's interest authentically and constructively, effective immediately, I will serve as a member of this House of Representatives as an independent representative.
What was your reaction when you heard that?
I wasn't surprised in a way because, you know, she's made some pretty strong statements in the past about the way she was treated and what she thought she'd signed up for and coming in as a Liberal candidate and what she ended up being in that role. And again, there's a very strong message in that. And I think that what you're seeing now with Karen Phelps coming in, with Sharkey there, with Julia now switching to the crossbenches, I mean, the balance of power or... as Karen said in her maiden speech the other day, the power of balance is becoming very important. And I think you're going to see a significant number of strong independent candidates stand for both the lower house and the upper house in the next election. I suspect that those who were instigators in the insurgency that led to Malcolm's demise, people like Hunt and Suker and others in Victoria, Dutton, Abbott certainly, they'll all be challenged. They'll probably all be challenged by very significant individuals. And so that may be in a situation where there is a significant number of independents, not necessarily party related, but independents in the lower house that hold the balance of power that actually can drive whoever's in government to better government, which would be a nice change from the games we've had.
Julia Banks was a very high-profile recruit for the Liberal Party. She brought, you know, she was brought in as a real talent who would benefit the party. She famously won, you know, the only seat off Labor at the last election. She's effectively been bullied out on her telling of it anyway. The Liberal Party's only as good as its MPs. So what is the message when a star recruit like her quits?
Well, it's a pretty sad message to anyone who's thinking about going into politics. I mean... politics generally has a capacity to burn people, to use them and their reputations for a particular end, a short-term end. You've seen it on the other side, Peter Garrett and others, you know, bring them in, capitalise on their name and then burn them when they, you know, they're not part of your team. But it's this, there's been a drift in politics towards very short-term political game playing, point scoring, blame shifting, issues, big issues and challenges have been left to drift. We're attracting the wrong sort of people into Parliament now in general. I mean, Julia stood out as an exception to that, but quite often they're people who've never had a real job. They've come out of some part of the political organisation, either the organisation itself or some sympathetic part of that, minister's office, a local government, whatever. The whole end game for them is playing politics, not actually solving problems and governing. And so I think it's a very significant thing when you get somebody of stature like Julia who comes in and then is consumed by the process. And I wasn't surprised that she decided in the end to step out, particularly the way she was treated by some of those insurgents, as she's reported, and also that she becomes part of that balance of power now, which is quite significant, not just for now but probably in the future. I suspect she might run now as an independent candidate. It's a lot harder to run as an independent. You have to raise a lot of money. You have to get, you know, a lot of personnel to support you in polling booths and that sort of thing. But I think that's the trend today. I mean, we've got an environment where people forget the drift. I think it was true back in the early post-war years that about 95% of people voted for one of the two major parties. It's now down in the low 70s. I think it was 55% in Wentworth. I mean, these are significant shifts and tells you that there's a mood around for an alternative force in politics. It may not be a minor party. We've had a few of them come and go. But it may be a collection of very substantive individuals who really have a sense of the national interest Looking after constituents rather than just a very selfish short-term political game, which the others are playing. So I think it's probably in the end it'll be a constructive development, I think. But, we've still got a way to go, and there'll be a lot of roadblocks put in place of people who really want to put their name in the ring. I mean, you know what politics is like today. Assertions get made about who you are and what you've done and where you've come from, what you believe, and so on, and you spend your time trying to answer those rather than getting on with what you thought you were going to do when you got there. But so I think politics itself is in a transition, and the Liberal Party definitely is in a transition, and nobody, as far as I can see, is prepared to face the reality of the brand damage that's been done over now quite a number of years.
We have an election date that's been more or less announced as being a May election. Is there any way that Scott Morrison and the Liberals can turn this ship around?
We can say that you can't say never, as we say. You can never say never in politics, but the chance of him winning is very small. I mean, with 55-45 margin, even though that would narrow in a campaign to some extent, and there'd be a bit more focus on Shorten and so on. I mean, the only argument I've heard them put is that Morrison has got a popularity edge over Shorten.
Mm.
Well, they should remember what happened with Abbott. He was not popular, and he won. And he won not because of the carbon tax, as he'd like to believe, but certainly because the electorate had given up on Rudd, Gillard, Rudd. And they're in the same mood right now. They've given up on the Liberal Party the LNP as a viable government. They've forfeited their right to govern when they don't have things like a climate action plan, for example. The electorate sees that, they don't. And I'm staggered that they've just allowed it to drift on as long as they have, and they're still letting it drift. And they're still running arguments that are largely irrelevant to the electorate. I mean, to talk about, oh, we're for jobs and we're for growth and we've got good, strong numbers in that respect. I mean, the electorate, you have to be over about 45 or 50 to remember the last recession. They take growth for granted. They take jobs for granted. There are issues within that, cost of living, housing affordability, you know, those sort of issues that are important to people in their day-to-day lives. And they can't understand how they just keep chanting these slogans, which are irrelevant in themselves, and yet fail to address the real issues that are confronting people on a day-to-day basis.
John Houston, thank you so much for joining us and coming in and sharing your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Jacqueline.
Hi, John Sylvester here. I'm the senior crime reporter for The Age. I've been a crime reporter in Melbourne for 40 years, covering gangland wars, outlaw bikies, police corruption, and the underworld of this city. And I've seen a lot of changes in the news business. But take it from me, I believe this newspaper is now filled with the best young news gatherers in decades. Our investigative unit is without doubt the best in The Age's history. This mob produces massive revelations nearly every week, and they're doing stories no one else will touch. And in the era of so-called fake news, we need mainstream media more than ever before. Subscribe to The Age. Support news you can trust.
I'm back now with our in-house politics heavyweights, Tony Wright and Bevan Shields. I just want to pivot now to federal affairs. Bevan, the Religious Freedoms Report will be tabled soon, we're told. How important will the handling of this whole religious freedoms issue be for the government as it runs into the election campaign?
Well, the handling to date has been appalling, I think the damage is really done, regardless of how they handle this pretty tricky issue over the next couple of weeks. So they botched, they kept the report hidden in the first place, which built mistrust in the community. It was leaked. The contents of the report highlighted laws that modern Australia didn't realise existed and thought, hang on a second, we're not going to wear this. It took Morrison a couple of days to really respond to that. He promised there would be action in the previous sitting fortnight. We're now a few days into the final sitting fortnight, and we still don't know what the government's going to do, particularly around the issue of removing the right of religious schools to discriminate against gay students and possibly teachers. There was a hope that Labor and the Coalition could get together and deal with this, like all things in Canberra at the moment. That fell in a heap, and of course there's no bipartisanship, so we're waiting. The real danger for Morrison is that this issue has to go to a party room meeting, and as we've seen post-Victoria, as we've seen post-Wentworth, as we saw post-Malcolm Turnbull's demise, the party is heavily, heavily split. And if there's a fight in the coalition party room on religious freedom, that is going to be a really, really ugly issue for Scott Morrison to have to negotiate.
Mm. I want to ask you both briefly about just the broader idea of social affairs issues. Tony Abbott said last week that the welcome to country in Australia should be accompanied by a prayer. Matthew Guy, I think, also campaigned on some public prayer sort of platform. And there has also been talk about the Liberal so-called woman problem. How much are sort of social issues like that going to affect the Liberal Party in terms of voter backlash at the federal election?
Well, it's affecting them in the sense that they're too preoccupied talking about these second, third, fourth order issues.
You're talking just to be clear, you're talking about the prayer stuff, not the woman problem stuff there.
Sorry. Yes.
Good, clarify that.
Good disclaimer. Yes, absolutely. These culture issues that the Conservatives in the Liberal Party cannot move on from and get themselves tied in knots over. They are talking about issues that we've seen in Victoria. They are issues that the public does not care about. They're issues, yes, that the base cares about, but this is exactly where they're getting themselves into trouble, because they're preaching to the base and they've lost sight and lost touch of what their broader electorates are actually talking about, what matters to them. So, I mean, if they want to keep... At this point, there's no sense that they have actually learnt the lessons of all those elections and experiences over this year, because even yesterday I noted Greg Hunt. Now, Greg Hunt is at real risk after the Victorian election of losing his seat. His seat has a margin of well over 7%. It's on the Mornington Peninsula. It should be an ultra-safe Liberal seat. If what happened in Victoria on Saturday happened at a federal election, he is gone. So you'd think that he would learn the lesson of what happened. Mm. But last night he was on Sky News talking about a plan that does not exist in the Labor Party platform to create dozens of different types of genders that would be used on official documentation. Now, I mean, that is just something that the public is not interested in. They're not talking about that. They're not concerned about that. But there you have Greg Hunt, a cabinet minister who's under real threat in his own seat at the next election, talking about an issue like that. It was a perfect example of that exact problem.
And this idea that anyone's talking to something called a base requires a bit of looking at. The truth is that the base is a word that should be, is a term that ought to be in quotation marks. Yep. No one quite knows what this base is, apart from those who are on Sky After Dark, and a few very loud characters from Queensland. Victoria proved, I think, if it proved anything, that certainly in this state, the base is a rump. It's a tiny little area off to the side, yet that the Conservatives within the party insist on talking to them as if this is important. I mean, there's an election next year. You talked about women a couple of minutes ago. Well, we've seen where that can end. The treatment of women after and during the recent coup has led now to one of them, Julia Banks, quitting the party while her leader was out in the courtyard trying to prove to everyone that he was restarting and rebooting his government's energy.
On the woman problem stuff, it obviously had that transactional cost of Julia Banks moving to the crossbench. But what about within the voter... you know, the voter body? I mean, in Victoria, did we see female voters, for example, turning off the Liberals as a brand?
You see one thing happening, and that is that more and more seats have women who might previously have been in the National Party or the Liberal Party going out there and standing as independents and getting pretty strong support. In fact, enough support in Victoria for several of them to go pretty close or actually gain seats. The Cathy McGowan factor, I suppose you could call it, somebody who is from a Conservative background, who goes back to the roots of what politics is supposedly all about, and that is providing better services for the electorate and talking about what the people she is talking to are talking about. Whereas it just seems to me that the major part of the party, or that which is most vociferous and loud, is off on an excursion.
And Jack, and we've obviously given the Liberal Party a bit of a fair beating today, and it's hard not to at this point. But in fairness to them, there are people in the party who get this. Mm. They absolutely get this. There are moderates in all the states who understand the culture wars, the problem with female representation in the party, the transactional costs of removing Malcolm Turnbull. They understand all that. And I think what we're going to see, and we've started to see it already, is those moderate voices in the party have had enough, and they're going to start reasserting their authority a little bit more. We saw that yesterday with a really significant intervention from the Senate President, Scott Ryan, who basically went on radio and said, "I'm sick of people telling me how to be a Liberal, people who've never been on a polling booth, never signed up to be a member, telling me and jamming down my throat what it means to be conservative or Liberal." And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And when you look at Scott Morrison's cabinet, there is a mix there of conservatives and moderates, but there's some really influential moderate voices in that cabinet. And I think slowly over Christmas, there might be a slow dawning, a slow realization that they've got to change, and I think the moderate influence will be a big thing to watch.
Well, if that doesn't happen, summer has been a great big waste of time, and people's brains have been melted by the sun, because this is so clear that this has to happen within a government, and it really doesn't matter whether it's a Liberal or Labor or otherwise. Governments are supposed to govern, and heading towards an election, you'd really want them to produce some sign that they were interested in doing that.
I want to bring it back just briefly to Bill Shorten versus Scott Morrison. That's the competition that we're shaping up for. And certainly Morrison this week told Bill Shorten very pointedly, "This is a contest between me and you." It looks like he's going to make it really personal, and he's going to play on voter concern about Shorten and some voter mistrust of Shorten. How do these two stack up next to each other? And is there a pathway to victory for Morrison? Just quickly from both of you.
Well, the contest between Morrison's line about "this is a contest between me and you, mate," sounded very familiar. And it's the exact line that Malcolm Turnbull used when he was going into the Super Saturday by-elections against Bill Shorten. And we know what happened there. People overwhelmingly backed Labor, led by Bill Shorten. So I think Bill Shorten's been opposition leader now for 5 years. That is quite extraordinary given what we know about modern politics at the moment. The public is not overly thrilled with Bill. They don't love him. They're not falling at his feet, but they've factored him in. They believe that the Labor Party is offering a better option on stability and policy.
Look, I've seen a lot of elections, and of course, pathways can be beaten. 1993, everyone believed that John Hewson was going to be the next Prime Minister. Paul Keating beat him in the last week. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things can happen. So I'm not going to predict that it is impossible for this government to be re-elected. But if I were forced to the ground and taken to Betfair and had to place my own money on it, I wouldn't put 1 cent on this government.
Bevan, we're not going to actually frog march our Tony into the
don't
nearest
make
bet
me,
fair.
Don't make me do that. I like Tony. I don't want to have to do that. Just one quick point. I think Morrison would like to fight the election on this turf. He would like it to be a fight and a contest between personalities, between he and Bill Shorten. I don't think the public is in the mood to give him that. I think the public is going to look broadly at the performance of the government, and it's been pretty ordinary the last 3 years compared to a Labor team that's been relatively united. And yes, there are some controversial policies in the Labor locker, but I think a big part of the reason Labor is ahead in the polls, it's not obviously because of Shorten, but it's because they are presenting a united team that actually has a policy vision for this country. I think people are really starved for that, and that's what they want. So I'm just not sure it's going to be actually be even a contest between a presidential contest between Shorten and Morrison.
If it were a presidential contest, I think you'd have to worry about Bill Shorten's chances. But I don't think that's where it's at this time around.
Mm.
Look, people are actually genuinely out with their baseball bats, and I think unless there is some sort of miraculous turnaround in the next few months, and we're really talking about the start of next year, because we're just about to finish the parliamentary session for this year.
Mm.
Then there'll be the long Christmas New Year break, and after Australia Day, the whole thing starts again. But there's only a few months after that.
Mm.
It'll be very, very interesting to watch how Scott Morrison tries to pull things together. But you've got to remember what happened to him today. He was trying to pull things together, and one of his backbenchers blew all that up.
Mm.
It just doesn't seem to be a great time to be a leader of a Liberal government at the moment.
And I've not talked to one Liberal MP who thinks they can win next year.
Mm.
Not one
mm.
actually can mount a convincing case that they will win. They've given up. They've given up. No one thinks that they can win.
It certainly is interesting times in the worst sense of the word for the Liberal Party. Bevan and Tony, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really interesting chat. Two of our finest journalists and two fine gentlemen to boot. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Subscribing to our news services gets you unlimited access to award-winning independent journalism and great behind-the-scenes content that you can't get anywhere else. Follow the link in our show bio to get a subscription today. This episode was produced and edited by David Escort and Rachel Dexter. Technical assistance from David McMillan and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. Special thanks to Amelia Maguire for her assistance. I'm Jacqueline Maley. Thanks for listening.